Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Here's Brock Nelson, 2-on-1 at the Leaf line. Right side, he's got Bailey going to the net. Shoots and scores! Brock Nelson has won it in overtime for the New York Islanders! They take it 6-5 here tonight over the Leafs, and they are mobbing Nelson in the left-wing corner of the Leaf zone!
Play by Petrangelo, held the line. Comes into the near corner, Pollock. With Perron on him, they get it from Steen, it's nasty, he scores!
Minnesota. They'll work it over to Prosser. Prosser got it in his left skate. Deflected it towards the right corner. Back for Prosser. Played back behind Bennett. Now for Pominville. Pominville. Parisi in front. Great save. Talbot scores on the rebound. And the Wild lead it by a score of 3-0.
Welcome to Tape to Tape. T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer for Sportsnet.ca, and to my left, it is Sportsnet.ca's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
Where are you in the offside debate? Get rid of offsides altogether, change the rules so that it doesn't matter if your skate is on the ice, get rid of reviews. What kind of change do you think
we need? I haven't delved into it too much. I mean, I would say there are times when it's like a millimeter or something like that where you think, oh, we're really going to call a goal back that happened a minute from now because of this. That will sometimes stick with me, but for the most part, I'm not ready to start an offside revolution. We'll see.
Good.
We'll see where it goes. I know you're never ready to start a revolution when it comes to these things, so I can guess where you stand. You can guess what we're going to talk about on this podcast, because the Boston Bruins, at last, would we say, fired Claude Julien. Man, the guy had been rumored so many times to be on the chopping block. It finally happened. We're going to speak with Kevin Paul Dupont of the Boston Globe to get the inside scoop on what went down, if this in any way caught people off guard, which, again, I think we know the answer to, and if this is something that he thinks can or will help the Bruins. We'll use that, too, to delve into some other teams that have decided to go the route of axing the coach, and you know, they have seen a bit of a bump. The St. Louis Blues, the New York Islanders, still early days. For the Blues, we're going to chat a little about the Western Conference in general, and maybe talk about how the recent firing of Julien could kind of sort of maybe have an impact on Canada's favorite French team. I think it's probably a stretch, but we will go there nonetheless with the Habs struggling. You should go to Sportsnet.ca, where you can always find the Tape to Tape podcast and other awesome podcasts like the Free Association NBA pod, and also At the Letters, where Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith go hard on the Jays and Major League Baseball. You can obviously check out both those pods as well in iTunes and subscribe there. Follow Rory on Twitter, at Rory Boylan, myself, at Dixon on Sports. So, yeah, we've seen, I wouldn't say that some of the Western Conference favorites are rising up per se, but Nashville's pulled itself into a playoff spot where certainly we thought it would be, if not at the head of the Central. I mean, I think this is the time of year every year when it comes to the Chicago Blackhawks, we all look at each other and go, would you really bet against them? Mm-hmm. And then LA, which has kind of established itself as the team that barely makes the playoffs, but you still don't want to play. They're getting quick back. I mean, do you think ultimately we're still living in a Western Conference world where the traditional heavyweights, specifically LA and Chicago, are teams to be positively terrified of?
I was having a discussion in the office about this, and there's been a lot of talk this year that the East is rising, eh? That they have all these great
teams. The Metropolitan
teams now.
Is, yeah.
Okay, the Metropolitan and Montreal with Carey Price, at least until recently.
Until a month ago.
But yeah, you look at, and there are a number of great teams, of course, it looks like in the Metropolitan Division, but I still think when you look at that Western Conference from top to bottom, and then it looks like even the teams that might miss out on the playoffs in those last one or two spots outside of the wild card are legit teams. Like the LA Kings might slip into a playoff spot and grab like the second wild card position. And then they're going to be in the same kind of spot they were in a couple years ago when they were an eighth seed and went on a they won the Stanley Cup that year, didn't they?
The first year they won, they were an eighth seed, I believe. So I can't remember what the second.
Yeah, the second one they were definitely better. They won as an eighth seed the first time, and they could do it again because their metrics are lining up the same way. They're throughout the time that the Kings have been a legitimate Stanley Cup contender and a powerhouse, they have constantly had the best or one of the best possession stats in the league, and they're right there again, second place behind the Boston Bruins, who are a bit destined to come back up. But I just think you have more depth in the Western Conference, more teams that if they get a wild card spot, they could go on. You wouldn't be terribly surprised if they went on and won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, like Dallas isn't going to make the playoffs, let alone win the Stanley Cup. But if in some world you just waved a wand and all of a sudden you had to play, you know, a Dallas or a Winnipeg, teams that almost certainly won't make the playoffs, well, it's like they could still shake it, you know? Whereas the teams just outside in the East, you're like, well, all right. I mean, would you say the same thing about New Jersey? I would say no.
Absolutely not. And I would say even about Dallas or Winnipeg, I mean, if one of those teams, I would say you probably have to do it before March 1st. If they go out and do something crazy Marc-Andre Fleury or Ben Bishop, then
specifically,
then you're definitely not Fleury. Thinking that they can't go on a run. Winnipeg is one I would have a tough time getting behind. Again, there's not enough forwards, I don't think, there, but I guess you could say the same thing about Dallas' defense. Yeah. There's not a lot there. But there's a lot of just natural talent. And, looking at the Eastern Conference, Boston, I think, is probably going to make it into the playoffs, and Bruce Cassidy is going to get all these suggestions that he's this masterful coach who turned this team around when they were actually already in a pretty good spot. The Islanders might even slip in. You know, the Florida Panthers, now that they have Barkov and Huberto back, might make a good push. You're not too confident in Roberto Luongo.
I'm overconfident in the hockey fantasy gods' desire to punish me, and I got Luongo, and I need something to change, and I just feel like Reimer's going to steal it down the stretch.
Yeah, but you're not thinking any of those teams are going to go and win a Stanley Cup.
No, that's right. Absolutely not.
That's the difference between the two conferences, but, you know, a lot of credit here, I have to say, to the New York Islanders and the way they bounced back. They look like they were going to be dead last in Eastern Conference, maybe get by the Detroit Red Wings, but they've surged 7-2-1.
They have to. Like, I mean, with everything going on there, with the miserable arena situation, with John Tavares' contract hanging over, like, I feel like they really, as much as any team, I mean, there's the Leafs kind of be like, ha-ha, we're playing with house money. We might make the playoffs. Yeah. And a team like the Islanders has got to be, and Florida to some degree, have got to be gritting their teeth, being like, we got to get in there. We got to nurture our fan bases. We got to keep building on the little positivity that we have.
I want to say, if I get this feeling that if you're a brand new fan to the NHL and you don't have a team yet and you're looking for a team, I almost want to say the Islanders might be the good underdog team that you want to get in on the ground floor on, because there's a lot of problems around their arena. They've been making this surge. You know, hopefully you end up keeping John Tavares and you don't lose your big star player 1 year after you become a fan of this team. But, you know, the owners seem like they've said they're committed to the New York market. They're committed to this team. They've talked about wanting to bring in, you know, a big executive to look over hockey operations, probably hire a new GM to come in for Garth Snow, who I don't think has done a bad job overall.
No.
He's mismanaged a couple of things. The way he's handled the goalies, for one, which is kind of ironic since he was a goalie himself. There has been some mismanaging of assets going on there, but overall, I think he's done a good job accumulating draft picks and getting good players. He's taken some home run swings on a couple of guys at the draft, like Kirill Kabanov and Josh Hosang, one of which didn't pan out. The other one, hopefully,
still
does.
Will.
But, you know, they're a team that they seem dedicated to turning this thing around and fixing it in a big way. So if you had to suggest to a brand new fan which team they should maybe start cheering for.
Is it not the Leafs with six rookies?
Maybe, well, come on. That's not a real underdog team, though. Start cheering for the New York Yankees if you're a new baseball fan or something.
Well, it's not exactly like that, but yes.
Well, I'd say it's pretty similar.
Minus three decades of success, yes. The Blues, too. I mean, it's early, but some reason to believe that, you know, in the post-Hitchcock world, for whatever reason, whether structural or otherwise, that they're going to climb back in there, too. And You know, again, maybe just as you described with LA, be a wild card team where a team like Minnesota is going to be like, awesome. Our reward for winning the division is we're now playing St. Louis, which after 4 months of being in disarray has now got its house in order.
Yeah, you get the sense this is another team to keep an eye out for. And again, that's another team I wouldn't be surprised to go out, not to get a Fleury or a Bishop in net, but to get somebody who can step in for Jake Allen, not necessarily to take the number one job from him in a playoff run, but to, you know, you lose your first two games of a series really badly, and now you need to turn to somebody for game three to just kind of try and stabilize it. And you know, is that a Yaroslav Halak? Is that somebody like that?
I thought, given the history with St. Louis and
Ryan Miller, same thing. Yeah, he used to be there. His cap hit might be too big, but if you get rid of Shattenkirk, depending on what your return is, you might be able to absorb that. But Darren Pang was talking about what's changed under Mike Yeo with that team. And it's funny because he actually pointed out defensive zone coverage, which you think of as a huge strength of Ken Hitchcock. But Pang was saying that under Hitchcock, they started to get away from really sound zone coverage and were doing more sort of chasing and one-on-one defensive zone coverage, which was ending up with the other team getting a lot of high-quality chances in the slot in that home plate area in front of the net, whereas so far under Mike Yeo, they've only allowed 5 goals in 4 games. They've scored 14, and a lot of the shots are now coming from the sides. Both Jake Allen and Carter Hutton have gotten shutouts. Of note, after Carter Hutton got a shutout, they could have just rode the hot hand for the next game. Even though they played the very next night, they could have just rode the hot hand, which is what they traditionally had done when they had Brian Elliott there and Jake Allen. But they went back to Jake Allen, and he posted a shutout of his own. And he's been good so far under Yao and with Martin Brodeur now as his goalie coach. Now, it's early, so it we'll is. See if these, things can sustain themselves. But this is the team that they were last year, right? They didn't just poof, go away. They're not just a crappy team all of a sudden.
I think it was in Friedman's 30 Thoughts where, I mean, I know it's always somewhat contentious in this day and age when you get into, you know, things that you can't necessarily quantify, but he was saying they lost Elliott, they lost Brower, oh, Backes, of course, the captain, and he was like, those guys were the buffer. Like, basically, you know, Ken Hitchcock, not necessarily known as warm and fuzzy man when it comes to dealing with players sometimes, a pretty straight shooter. And like, basically, those guys were there to absorb the message, and then they could disseminate it kind of thing. And yeah, it was just one of those things where you're like, you know, I know you'd be laughed out of the room in some circles for talking about that, but you could see where maybe that was an adjustment for the Blues, and maybe something's different now, you know?
Sure. I just want to say this because I find this kind of funny. We're talking about the teams fighting for a wild card spot in here in the Western Conference. We could see them going on a big Stanley Cup run. What do you think of the Minnesota Wild? Who are actually
least talked about
the Western Conference right now.
All right, we're dedicating wild guest to the pod very soon then. Maybe after the trade deadline madness, we should do a deep dive on Minnesota and talk about what's gone on there.
An exciting team. You don't think about that when you think of the Minnesota Wild because they still have the
ghost of Lemaire hanging over the...
I was going to say Stain, but...
Oh, come on. He's a hockey genius.
But it was boring hockey to watch. And you got the great story with Devan Dubnyk. But, I mean, the game against Chicago, that was a highly entertaining game. They're a fast team. I love Charlie Coyle. I'm a big Charlie Coyle fan. He's having a...
Him and Granlund have been my two guys for years. I'd have been like, this is a year. I don't have either of them this year. Jacques Lemaire, fantastic French-Canadian coach in his day. Claude Julien, fantastic French-Canadian coach right now. Probably the only other guy in his category off the top of my head would be Alain Vigneault, gainfully employed with the Rangers. Whenever this when you combine the availability of a guy like Julien with the Canadians winning 3 out of 11, you're going to get people coming out of the woodwork to say, oh, should we connect some dots here? I don't think there's any chance that the Canadians make any kind of coaching change between now and the end of the year unless things go way off the rails. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I know the analogy you've made is that Julien is, to some degree, the French Mike Babcock, and this is all operating under the assumption that for the foreseeable future, Montreal will not hire a coach unless he speaks both languages. Obviously, your pool gets narrowed.
Yes.
You know, you would get people saying, Well, you owe it to the team if and the organization if a guy who people are basically from Mike Babcock himself on down are in universal agreement that he's fantastic and one of the best five coaches, say, on planet Earth, then you better be talking to him.
You better be talking to him. I don't expect a change.
No chance.
To me, it
There's
comes
no
back
chance.
To, do you think Michelle Therrien is the coach who can take this team across the finish line and get to the Stanley Cup? I don't really think so.
I don't think he has the team either, but yeah.
Yeah. Is he that kind of a... Do you think he could?
I just... if you said to me, like... I just have... And I'll admit that because it's sometimes a bit intangible talking about, like, what impact a coach has on a team, or it can be... I just don't see Michelle Therrien as the thing holding the Canadiens back. I see a lack of frontline talented, you know, there's still, I think, two serious skaters away, at least one, from being in a real conversation. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I understand the rap on him is that he's old school and that, you know, it's a dump it out, chip and chase, foxhole mentality. I just feel like if you said write down the list of things that Montreal needs to get to the next level, get rid of Therrien for me, and that hashtag is out there and has been out there for a long time. For me, it's not in the first or second slot.
Right, but the kind of change that you need to make is probably not going to be something you can do in season.
Yeah.
I would assume,
yeah,
right?
So that's fair.
To me, it comes down to... this coach is available. Claude Julien is available. Your window to win is open probably for as long as
3 years,
you have
or,
Carey Price before his contract runs out or before Shea Weber starts to break down. You have those guys on a very short window here where they're either on the team or on the team at the peak of their game. And now you have one of the best coaches in the NHL come available. I think you have to do everything you can to go for it. And that involves just making this move, because how often is this opportunity going to come up? How often is a Mike Babcock equivalent to the Montreal Canadiens going to come available to just do everything you can to make a push? But I don't think Bergevin sees Therrien as the problem either, and I don't think he would make that move. He seems to be a big fan of the coach.
Worth noting, both Claude Julien and Alain Vigneault have already coached the Canadiens and they got rid of them. And in Claude Julien's case, rather unceremoniously, and he went to their... you could say biggest rival, and
whatever he wants to come back.
Yeah, no doubt. Maybe he's a Bruin convert forever. Who knows? Let's find out. When we come back on the other side of the break, we are going to speak with Kevin Paul Dupont of the Boston Globe. We're going to chat Julien and all things Bruins and see what Kevin sees in the immediate future for the Bruins and if their fortunes will turn around. That is coming up on the other side of the break on Tape to Tape.
Ain't no love in the heart of the city.
First of all, I want to thank Claude. I want to acknowledge the level of success that he has achieved as a coach of the Boston Bruins, and acknowledge that he's, you know, a great coach, a tremendous person, and he's meant a lot to our organization in moving this group forward with an eye towards the plan that we had put in place, that I wasn't ready to commit on a longer-term basis with Claude. I felt that there was a level of frustration on a wins and loss night and what he would be subjected to on a nightly basis. I just felt that there was an opportunity now as I was contemplating the decision, the impact of the decision. Again, I apologize that it fell on a day where obviously New England is incredibly excited, but I didn't make the schedule in terms of where these days would exist from a practice standpoint. My relationship with Claude has really evolved and grown over the last little while. I just seeing where our group is as of today and where I want to get to, I'm excited about whether or not Butch and this coaching staff can make their own imprint. Let's see where that goes. I would like to see how the team responds in the next three games, and then we certainly have a big break to see how far we'll be back in the playoff race.
With respect to Claude Julien, I mean, you're having this press conference now. This guy, 10 years in the Stanley Cup, he's a respected NHL coach. Why not have it later on this afternoon? Why not tonight? Why not tomorrow? Why is it got to be right now?
During the parade itself, mostly because the PR department had explained that you need to, once you make a decision in that regard, you need to stand up in front of people and acknowledge the reasons behind it and move on from there.
But you said you didn't want to mute it, but it does have the effect of this being kind of wedged in behind the parade.
No, I don't think it has that effect, other than people here in the room would be missing the parade. Yes, I acknowledge that, and I apologize for that. But outside of that, I don't believe I'm downplaying the impact of the decision and how difficult it was at all, to be honest.
No, sometimes, you know, to be honest with you, it's time to move on. Julie Boy's a hell of a coach. He ain't getting better. So when you make these decisions, you better have a guy in line that's better than that guy. Not many.
And now that you're gone, the sun don't shine from the city hall to the county line. I say there ain't no love in the heart of the city.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Joining us on the line now, he covers the Boston Bruins for the Boston Globe. It is Kevin Paul DuPont. Kevin, how you doing?
Great, sir. How are you doing?
We're doing all right. I mean, we've been joking about it. Lots of people have been joking about it. It was, you know, probably no coach faced, or no really good coach faced, the rumors that he would be let go as much as Claude Julien during his time there. When I was recently there for a feature on Marchand, I think one of the first things I heard from the Bruins press corps was, are you here for the death march or death watch kind of thing? It finally happened. So I guess that's a long way of saying this probably wasn't that big of a surprise for you guys.
No, I guess, and this is not a reflection of Claude's work at all, which I admire and respect, but I would look at it from the other side and say it's amazing that he lasted this long. And I say that, you know, having covered the team for the better part of 40 years now and having lived through at least a dozen coaching changes, starting with Don Cherry and then on to Freddie Creighton and Cheevers, on and on, the Butch Goring, Mike Milbury, Steve Casper. You know, I got accustomed to the turnover being about every 30 months. So for someone in the last 10 years, it's quite amazing, which is true of the whole league too, right?
Absolutely.
It's just nature of the business. You're hired to be fired. So the rumors were that he would be fired before they won the Stanley Cup in 11. They were they started to come up consistently a couple of years after, and here they are, do the math, almost 6 years later, and it finally happens. So certainly not a shock, but nonetheless, as always, a surprise.
What can you tell us about the interim coach, Bruce Cassidy? I find it interesting that he actually coached 2 years in the NHL before the lost 2004-2005 season, got into the playoffs 1 year with the Washington Capitals, and he hasn't been back since. He's been an assistant for 1 year. He's been in the OHL for a couple, and he's basically been with the Providence Bruins since 2008-2009, first as an assistant and then as a head coach until this season he gets the promotion up. Like, what kind of a coach is he? What kind of a guy is he? And you know, is he going to need to bring any changes to this Boston team that has strong underlying numbers?
It's a great question. We're in the midst of a blizzard here right now in Boston, so provided they play tonight, we'll start to find those answers here about 7 o'clock. I don't know. I can tell you from the sounds of 2 days of listening to him at practice, which means probably nothing. It sounds like he has, you know, as you guys know, every coach is preaching up tempo, speed, you know, quick transition. That's certainly his theme. But that's not to say, you know, on the same hand, that was Claude's theme too, especially this year. If you look at when they won the Cup, they were still an intimidating team. They were still big, you know, broad shoulders. Lucic, probably the best example of that, did win on toughness as part of it. But it's still a team in transition from its, if you will, its old DNA, which, you know, the very old DNA has been lost, the big bad Bruins. But it's a league now that is go-kart hockey. Everyone is playing the same game, and the change was made here, frankly, at least the stated reason, was that they want to try to see a team play with a different coach, a different method, the different method being speed. We'll see. What I see across the league, guys, is everyone's trying to play it. Not everybody can, and I think in many regards, when you watch it, it's what you see teams night after night. My old expression is a team that overdrives its headlights. Everybody's trying to go fast. They can't necessarily make plays or score goals from it. So I think some of these teams would be better advised to slow it down a notch if they can and actually try to play make. But we'll see. Their method, the stated method going into this with Bruce Cassidy as their coach, is to try to push it, try to get players to play faster, and try a different approach to attack the net.
What do you think the realistic expectations can be for this roster? I mean, you referenced the championship. They went to the final in 2013 and really could have won that, a very close series against the Blackhawks. Yep. We still think of Boston in the context of championship caliber team, even though they've missed the playoffs a couple years in a row. Are there just inherent limitations on this roster that should temper expectations, or do you think it is still a team that could have one more kick with its present core at, you know, say, winning the Eastern Conference?
It's a great question, and I would say temper expectation. I don't see that it's a championship team. I don't, and again, it is hockey, and I've watched enough to know that often the results are sheer caprice. But on paper and what I've watched for the last 2 years, it's a team that really has suffered from the poor assets back in the Sagan and Hamilton deals. So if you took this roster as presently composed and minus the players that they've picked up in the trades, or even if you took out Backes, who's somewhat a function of the trades because they had to go out and get people, I think you'd be more encouraged about the core of this lineup dressed up with effective Sagan, dressed up with an effective Hamilton. So it's not to say it's all on those two deals, but it very much is part of it. And they made those deals because they felt they had to. In retrospect, they probably want them both back. Right now, what you've got is a decent core, but certainly old with Chara at 40. Bergeron has got a lot of miles on him, tremendous player. He's got a lot of miles on him at 31, has not had a good year here. They're really counting on with this coaching change, not that they're saying it, they're counting on getting more production out of Bergeron, more production out of Krejci. And maybe some of these kids kind of light it up too.
Even though they might not be as much of a contender as they have been in the past, they're certainly built, like you said, to a lot of veterans. They're still built to win it right now. How aggressive do you think that makes them at the trade deadline then? Where, I mean, if you're going to make a push, I would think you need to get some kind of a backup goaltender to give them some stability there. That's a huge problem. And then we've heard these rumors too around Brandon Carlo. I think he was tied to Gabriel Landeskog at one point, and they don't seem to be wanting to move him. And again, like, he's one of their prized young assets. Is he that good? And, you know, and what other kind of moves do you think the team might make or might have to make?
Well, to focus on the two players you brought up, or position anyway, they definitely need help at backup goaltender. They've tried Khudobin, and they brought in Zane MacIntyre. They give a very cursory look to Subban, who frankly is playing much, since it's Malcolm Subban, playing much better in the minors for the last month or so. So they do need to improve that position if they're really going to get into the mix here, because they can't keep grinding away at Tuukka Rask. And we've seen the effect of that over the last, this is the third year of it now, of not having adequate backup. And he tires, and you can tell he's tired now again. He's been, other than his 10-1 start, he's been pretty much a 5-1 goaltender here. It's a 500 goaltender here for the better part of 2.5 to 3 months. So as for Carlo is an exciting player. He's 20 years old now. He's been paired with Chara as the number one shutdown unit. Was much better his first 4 to 6 weeks than he has been in the last, again, almost like Tuukka for these last two and a half months. But he is, by my eye, he's their best defenseman drafted and brought in and put into place since Bork. Not to say that his game in any way resembles Ray's game, but he is, for a potential stud defenseman, doesn't have Ray's high end, but I think he can be that. I think he can be a legitimate first pairing, certainly shutdown, and I think he's got some more offensive pop in him than we've seen. I asked that question to Cassidy yesterday. He seems to think the same. So maybe there's another guy to look at with a change. Maybe they'd force him a few more minutes, get him on second unit power play or something. But I don't see them moving him. What they will do February 28th, I suppose, if it collapses here over the next, I haven't counted the games to Feb 28, but they've got a week off too. That doesn't help them in terms of the teams with games in hand. And, easy answer is we'll find out where their record stands. If they totally collapse here between February 28th, maybe I could see them moving somebody out of their core. I wouldn't see them moving Carlo.
Well, that goes to The last one I have for you, speaking of what's going to happen here the next couple of weeks, let's make it the next couple of months. Do you think they will be able to grab one of those final playoff spots? Or maybe not even final. They can still get to second in their division, but do you think ultimately they will be able to snag a playoff spot?
Very tough to feel encouraged by it. You've got the math in front of you and I don't. But I guess they're not a guess. Their best bet is that Philly falters and they can kind of snag one of those two wild card spots. I just don't see, given the games in hand here that the surrounding competition has, I don't see that their game is going to get on a 6-win streak, an 8-win streak. I think they're going to be 500, 520, 460, somewhere in there in terms of win percentage. It's a real tough haul. Now, some of this is not to make excuses here, but some of this, as you guys well know, there's some teams that had a really torrid first half here in terms of scheduling, and they were one of them. Between the World Cup thing, some guys coming in a bit tired, and then real compressed schedules. Somebody told me what it was the other day. I think it was 50 games over 102 days.
Yeah,
it's a wacky scheduling. So they've paid the price for that. They're going to get some rest now because they do get this 6-day blow. But by my money, by my eye, it looks to me like they've brought in Bruce Cassidy too late to try to catch the falling knife. And I just don't think they're going to make it. I think they're looking at their third straight DNQ.
Well, that will certainly bring about another round of interesting off-season questions. Yeah, yeah. Kevin Paul DuPont will be there to answer those as well. For the Boston Globe, you can follow him at GlobeKPD on the Twitter. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today.
All right, gents, my pleasure.
That is Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe. Not exactly painting a rosy picture for the Boston Bruins.
I see it more rosier. But...
Well, you do because of... As you said, a lot of numbers suggest the Bruins should be getting some breaks. I referenced it there. I was in Boston just before the All-Star break to do a feature of Marchand. Check it out on sportsnet.ca. Shameless plug. It is there now. And it was funny. The two games I watched were kind of a microcosm of the Bruins season in that they played Detroit and Pittsburgh. They got down in both games despite in the Detroit game. The shots were... I think Boston had 13 shots halfway through the first period. Detroit had zero, scored on its first shot, which was a breakaway for Athanasiou. But Boston came back and won both those games. So it was kind of like, oh, is this team, that did deserve better results in those games and in the season, in the games themselves, they did get a better result. Will they get them in the season? I don't know. The good news is they're in the Atlantic, right? So
yeah, and... I mean, as strong as their underlying numbers are, Ottawa's are that weak. So they would be the team that you would have to look at to come down. I think Kevin made a good point, too, that Philadelphia is ripe as well. They've had some surprisingly goaltending issues there.
Surprisingly?
Well, you don't think that by their name, Steve Mason and Michael Neuwirth aren't really
household. Should be okay.
They should be good enough.
Yeah.
They're not going to win a Vezina. And don't get me wrong, they're not star goalies, but that's never been... Well, recently...
Mason has won a Vezina, though, hasn't he? But
Calder.
Calder,
right?
Yeah.
Recently, that hasn't been the big area of concern for the Flyers. The joke is, of course, that they haven't had great goaltending since Bernie Perron. It's actually not a joke. It's probably true.
Yeah, minus a few good runs from Ron Hextall in there.
Yeah, but that hasn't been the problem. So the fact that the goalies have been a real drag for them this year means they're a team that is ripe there to be taken over. Now... We've talked about the teams in front of Boston, but now you have Florida, who I mentioned before, with Barkov and Huberto back. They're now in a nice spot where they should make a little bit of a charge. The Islanders making the charge. It's still hard to count out the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though they're currently hanging to it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the same reason that you used to have a tough time, same-ish reason that you used to have a tough time counting out Detroit. There's just so much there that you really don't want to count them out too early. And you have this idea that Steve Yzerman is going to do some kind of shrewd move that's like, oh, that was something that I didn't see coming that really adds. And plus, you're going to get Steven Stamkos back on top of that. So And all these teams have games, at least one game, and usually more games in hand of the Boston Bruins, who have played more games than anybody in the Eastern Conference. So that's also a huge factor here in that they're ahead of a lot of these teams in the schedule to this point. So while I do think it is an uphill battle, that Atlantic Division and the fact that Philadelphia is coming down, it's definitely not over for the Boston Bruins yet. There's a path there for them. They can't go on anymore. You know, you can't have 3-game losing streaks anymore. You probably can't even have 1 3-game losing streak.
Yeah.
Now that you're resting, you have to take advantage. And now it's, you know, not that you have to go on a Columbus Blue Jackets type, whatever it was, 17-game winning streak. But you do have to start putting together some serious winning streaks and not dip down into some 3-4-5-game losing streaks, as that probably does bury your season.
Well, one guy helping them, as I said, I mean, I was there for a reason to write about Marchand. I mean, man, this guy's turned into a great player. And of course, the feature. Of course, I had some quotes that from interviews beforehand about, he's really turned a page here and da da da. And then I go down there, and the first game, he kicks out Nicholas Cronwall's feet, and you think, well, maybe we should just hold off a little bit here. But you know, it's always going to be part of his story, the devil on one shoulder and the and the angel on the other. But setting that aside, and I do think, like, there's, you know, the thing that I was struck by is there's definitely awareness on Marchand's part. You know, as I said in the piece, of course, if you're not a Bruins fan, you're gonna want to paint him as this comic book like villain. I really don't think he is that kind of person. He hasn't learned to cut out the real stupid stuff, because you'll live with the stuff that comes out of just playing physical and playing on the edge. But you got to cut the stupid slew foots out. You know, there's no gray area there. I don't think anyone, including Brad, probably really knows why that's still part of it. But, this guy who had 37 goals last year, he's a top 5 scorer right now in the league.
He's a Team Canada staple now.
He's playing with Sidney Crosby and Patrice Bergeron. Like, as Chris Kelly, a former Bruin and very close friend of Marchand, said, you know, it's not a case of like, oh, just anyone could ride shotgun with those guys. Like, to think and jive with those guys, you got to be an elite player, and it speaks to just how good he is.
His shot is incredible.
Yeah, it's become really good.
Like you said, though, that dumb stuff, the slew foots, the Cronwell one was bad, the Stroman one that they didn't punish him for, I don't understand why they didn't punish
him. You thought it was right
in
the same...
I don't know how it's not.
Given the context, too, that he just got to pass more passes than 10 grand.
He knows he needs to smarten up and all this stuff. You know,
he does say the right thing.
It irritates me when he does cross that line and do stupid things like that, but at the same time, I'm almost like, I kind of don't want him to cut it out, because that's the kind of player he is.
Well,
you know, that's what gets him going. That's what gets him into the game. You know, it's just who he is as a player, and I wouldn't want to change anything.
If
I was a coach, I wouldn't be.
Oh, you get to Claude Julien does not, obviously he was still the coach then. He does not go to any great lengths to try to mask the frustration they've had with him over time. And he certainly is complimentary of him as a player. But I mean, he's definitely a bit like a dad of a teenager who's just like, this kid, I told him, you know.
I guess what you'd be worried about is it's not such a big deal in the regular season, but if he does that in the wrong time in the playoffs, which I guess is any time in the playoffs, where you get yourself into a position where either you're taking a penalty at a bad time or you're getting yourself suspended for a game for doing something stupid like that, now that's seriously costing your team. And I would hope he would be able to cut that stuff out from his game, at least in the playoffs and situations like that, because it's just focus, isn't it?
You know, like chirping and being physical, I buy that can get you going. I don't buy that you have to kick out people's feet to get your blood going. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a correlation there. But yeah, man, has he ever become a player to watch for the Bruins and in the league in general?
Speaking of that, I want to ask, you have a Q&A with Brandon Carlo coming up, I believe, as well?
Yeah, I talked to him while I was down there. It won't be Q&A. It'll just be a regular story that will probably will run maybe before Vancouver's in Boston, right, on Saturday, I think?
I was going to say it was the other way around, but yeah, you might have it right.
I think it is. But yeah, high praise there.
High praise.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Again, like, looking at when you hear that trade proposal off the top, Brandon Carlo for Gabriel Landeskog, you're like, oh my God, why didn't they take it? But you look at Boston's roster and their futures, right? I mean, that's your big defenseman.
Yeah.
you would be very, I would be very scared to give him away in any kind of a trade right now, because then what are you latching on to in the future? You've traded, I mean, the, like Kevin talked about the Hamilton and Sagan trades, there's nothing left. You know, it's just
tough. And you know what? You kind of, I think actually speaking with Kevin a couple years ago, when you're outside the market, you don't really go over this stuff. But if you're a Bruins fan, like especially before that Stanley Cup, you're sitting there going, Joe Thornton, bye-bye. Phil Kessel was a fantastic player that, you know, you're looking at him going, why is this guy scoring 80 points for a team in our division that isn't our team? You know, like, there's a bit of a grand tradition of some really good players going out the door at a young age, which, hey, full marks of the Bruins. You win a Stanley Cup, you dine out on that for a long time. And as I reference, don't forget the Blackhawks, we were on the verge of a game seven in that series before the Hawks went bing, bing and scored two in the last 3 minutes. Boston was with that team every step of the way. They very easily could have won two championships in the past, while somewhat little while. But yeah, tough to keep rolling when you're seeing talent, young talent like that go out the door.
And I guess the flip side too is, yeah, they don't have a heck of a lot in the future, although they did pick three first round picks right in a row.
Yeah.
Well, then who they took off the board, not in order that they should have gone into. But you also, you look at today's roster and you think, well, they have to go for a Stanley Cup now, right? And if you were to trade a Brandon Carlo, I would think you would have to win a Stanley Cup for that trade to look good at any point in the future.
And there's Kevin saying he doesn't think they're going to make the playoffs. And I mean, maybe they do, but do you really think even with Landeskog, the Bruins are going to beat Pittsburgh and Washington and then a Western Conference team in the final?
Well,
or I guess they don't have to beat both those teams necessarily.
I like Boston more than you guys do, I have to say. I'm not...
It's second. I think it's to me, there's a drop. I love the first line, and I don't worry about Bergeron yet at all. But Krejci has got, I think he's got a couple of hip surgeries on his docket now. I mean, Backes maybe can get it cranked up still for a little while, but I worry about the drop off in forwards, and then the D. I think the advanced stats maybe say something different, but I just look at a D led by the 40-year-old Zdeno Chara. I'm not there. Can't get behind it for to win four rounds. Tough.
Yeah, if you're a GM in Don Sweeney's position, though, where you have a terrible trade history in your short term as GM, you have made your coaching change, you probably have at least a full-time hire to make still. I mean, your window in that position to win is going to close. I would be tempted, not that I would for sure trade Brandon Carlo or anything. I would certainly look for other avenues I could add something. And it's not like you need to add something big. You don't need to add Landeskog necessarily, but you do need to add some, maybe some depth up to the forwards. And if you were to trade Carlo, well, now you've got a little bit of a problem on defense that you're going to need to fill. So I would be scared to do that. But at the same time, if I'm the GM, I am looking for any opportunity I can to push this team forward right now. Well, this window is open to some degree, whether it's more closed the way you and Kevin seem to think it is, or a little bit more open the way I see it. Like, I'm not someone who would be totally surprised to see Boston, I'm not picking them, to come out of the Eastern Conference. They're the same kind of team as, you know, how we wouldn't be surprised if LA came out of the Western Conference. I wouldn't be surprised if Boston was in the same. They have that tradition of, even though they haven't made the playoffs the last 2 years, they've been a pretty good team for the last couple of years, and they had some New York Stanley Cup runs. They have the big defenseman still in Chara, who is slowing but is still a sturdy body, and now he's got Carlo, the young, quicker guy, playing with him, and you have the big goalie who can carry you through series kind of behind it all. So I think they have the pieces there to scrape by an Eastern Conference that isn't as full of great teams as we really thought it was earlier in the year.
We will see the black and gold, the Boston Ruins. No, it's definitely not that bad.
Not yet.
We'll see.
Maybe in a couple years, though.
Maybe in a couple years. That is all we have for you this time on Tape to Tape. Make sure you jump on Twitter and follow Rory at Rory Boylan, myself at Dixon on Sports. Sportsnet.ca is where you can find this podcast, as well as iTunes. Why don't you subscribe? It's a lot of fun, isn't it? That's all we have for you this time, but check back next week for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.